The attack on Aramco oil installations in Saudi Arabia disrupted not only Saudi Arabia's oil production, it also affected the world's oil supply. If there were any hopes that this may highlight the war in Yemen, which tens of thousands have been killed by the Saudi bombardments, they were dashed when all that was highlighted is how Iran is at fault without definitive proof. In this edition of the debate, we will also look at the attacks on Saudi oil installations, Washington's accusations against Tehran, what Iran's leader has said about the possibility of talks between Iran and the U.S.
The United States continues to blame Iran without offering evidence for the drone attacks on Saudi Arabia's oil facilities that Yemen's Ansarullah movement has assumed responsibility. In fact, Washington first accused Tehran for the attacks and said it will produce the evidence later on. The Yemeni strikes have had mixed international reactions. China, Russia, as well as the European Union called for restraint, while France and UN's special envoy for Yemen, Martin Griffiths, said it was not entirely clear who was behind Saturday's incident. Saudi allies and Israel pointed the finger of blame at Iran. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu even went a step forward, saying Tel Aviv is well prepared for any spillover of violence in the Persian Gulf. As usual, U.S. President Donald Trump also missed no time in joining the anti-Iran chorus.
Well, it's looking that way. We'll have some pretty good, we're having some very strong studies done, but it's certainly looking that way at this moment, and we'll let you know. As soon as we find out definitively, we'll let you know, but it does look that way.
In a meeting with the visiting Bahraini Crown Prince, Trump said Washington is prepared for war more than anybody else. There, Salman bin Hamad Al Khalifa also revealed a deal Manama has struck to buy a U.S. Patriot missile battery to enhance its military readiness. During the meeting, Trump claimed that Iranian officials wanted to meet with the Americans. The U.S. president, however, refuted his earlier calls that he was ready to hold talks with Iran without any preconditions. Trump said sanctions are part of the conditions and won't be taken off. Meanwhile, leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has once again rejected any possible negotiations between Iran and the United States at any level.
در هیچ سطحی بین مسئولین جمهوری اسلامی و آمریکایی ها اتفاق نخواهد افتاد.
آیت الله خامنه ای said the only condition Iran will talk to the U.S. is that Washington changes its behavior and retreats from its unilateral decision to leave the 2015 nuclear deal. Iran's leader has, on several occasions, cautioned the nation that Washington is pursuing the issue of negotiations as a trick to impose its will on the Islamic Republic. As his foreign policy agenda is in shambles, including his approach to North Korea, the so-called deal of the century for the Israeli-Palestinian peace talks, divisions with Europe over a number of issues, including the NATO budget, trade policies, and Iran's nuclear deal, it seems Trump is in hot pursuit of a major political capital for the 2020 election. His maximum pressure on Tehran seeks to force the Islamic Republic to yield to Washington's demands and negotiate the 2015 nuclear deal. Iran, at the same time, says there will be no negotiations as long as Washington does not change its anti-Iran policy.
Our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, author and broadcaster Jonathan Fryer, joins us from London. We have former U.S. diplomat in Saudi Arabia, Michael Springman, who joins us from Washington, D.C. Gentlemen, welcome. Lots of confusion in terms of the way that Saudi Arabia and the U.S. are portraying who's behind these attacks. But first, let's take a look at a basic question over here. There was an extensive drone operation, as you're well aware, that happened at Saudi Arabia's oil facility, Aramco, deep inside the kingdom. Yemen's Ansarullah claimed responsibility. And when it comes to the fingers being pointed at the guilty party, well, it seems like it's being pointed to Iran. And there's no definitive proof of that. Ansarullah recently acquired much more powerful drone technology that has given them the power to, at this point, exercise to strike targets 1,500 kilometers away. Why are fingers being pointed to Iran and not the entity that has claimed responsibility, which is Ansarullah from Yemen? Michael Springman.
Okay, well, simple. American policy, Saudi policy, and Israel policy is simply to stop, block, ruin, or wreck the economy of and political influence of Iran. They feel that they can get away with this because they control the means of communication in the West. And they have people like Hussein Ibish, the noted writer, who is fully in the pay of the Gulf Cooperation Council, writing today that it's all Iran's fault, and we need to use force against Iran to stop its attacks, without, of course, any shred of proof ever being yielded up that it was Iran at the end of this. The Ansar Allah in Yemen could well have used boats from the Persian Gulf on Abqaiq. They could have had help from Qatar firing missiles from there, or drones from there, or from some of the oppressed Shia in the eastern province where Abqaiq is located, or even from Bahrain where the Shia are being oppressed. So who knows? And until we find out, threatening war will only lead to an increased opportunity for someone to take it into his head to fire weapons for real that will have far-reaching effects on the region and the rest of the world.
So let's see over here. We're looking at the accusations coming from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Mr. Fryer, taking a look at what he has said, he's supposed to actually display diplomacy here, but he says that Iran is to blame for the attack, tweeting that Iran has now launched an unprecedented attack on the world's energy supply, yet he provided no proof. Just about a half hour ago, you have the Saudi energy minister who says Saudi Arabia doesn't know who is behind the attacks, and yet you have the U.S. president who says that the U.S. is locked and loaded in reference to, obviously, military action. Who's telling the truth here? Why is it that we're getting inconsistent statements from both the U.S. and Saudi Arabia?
Well, the American line very clearly is that from their point of view, the Iranians are to blame directly or indirectly. There was even one American official who refused to be quoted by name, who declared that the attacks were actually by cruise missiles fired from Iranian territory. But other accusations have been that the drones were from Iraq, and indeed there were reports of a drone overflying Kuwait City. Or, of course, there is the explanation that it was the rebel forces in Yemen that fired the drone attack are responsible. But it's interesting, Mike Pompeo is on his way to Saudi Arabia now, and it's significant that the Saudis are being more cautious. The Saudis are actually calling for an international investigation into exactly what did happen. Obviously, President Trump and Mike Pompeo are trying to use the incident for propaganda purposes, but the Europeans, particularly the French and the Germans, are being very clear that we should not try to blame anyone at the moment, and what needs to happen is a de-escalation of what is an alarmingly escalating situation.
Okay, Michael Springman, you heard our guest, Jonathan Fryer, but it still doesn't erase the fact that you have accusations directly accusing Iran. It doesn't seem, is that the norm now when it comes to the U.S., when you have commander-in-chief and the U.S. president who says we're locked and loaded, ready to attack, and then you have the Secretary of State saying Iran was responsible. You have U.S. official, based on the condition of anonymity, who has says definitely it was launched from Iran. And then you have, of course, Saudi Arabia, which the U.S. said, by the way, we're going to leave it up to the Saudis to determine through their intelligence who was behind it, who are now saying we don't know who's behind it. You know, the language of threat, is that the new norm?
It apparently is, and I think it comes a lot from what some people have said is Trump's position. He wants to appear strong and powerful, a great commander-in-chief, and at the same time he's desperate to avoid tangling with another tar baby. The story from the Uncle Remus tales in the American South, where Brother Fox tried to trap Brother Rabbit by creating a baby made out of tar and creating insults and then forcing the rabbit to attack the tar baby. And of course, he got wrapped up in the tar and couldn't get free. And that describes Trump's situation in the region. He talks about pulling soldiers out of Afghanistan. He talks about pulling soldiers out of Syria. And he's immediately attacked by the Democrats for weakening the American position and letting the wicked terrorists in whatever country he's talking about gain the upper hand instead of letting them work out their own situation for themselves. So Trump is gotten himself into a position where he can't possibly get out of it with grace and with dignity, and he results basically to Trump bluster and blaming the Iranians for this and blaming the Iranians for that. The Iranians are responsible for the mess in Syria. The Iranians are responsible for the attacks on the Saudis, who are, and he conveniently ignores the fact that the Saudis and the Emiratis have destroyed Yemen, one of the poorest countries in the Arab world. So I think that Trump and his yes men, his Zionist yes men surrounding him, all support the bluster because they see no way out. And of course, while John Bolton is gone, the lunacy lingers on.
So, Jonathan Fryer, I'd like to pick up on one of the points that Michael Springman talked about there, which is the war in Yemen. And I'm going to come at you with what Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif has said in a tweet. Just imagine the U.S. isn't upset when its allies mercilessly bomb babies in Yemen for over 4 years while its arms and military assistance. But it's terribly upset when the victims react the only way they can against the aggressor's oil refineries. Saudi Arabia compared this attack to its, saying it's a 9/11 for Saudi Arabia. Now, to the best of my knowledge, nobody was killed in this attack by the drones from Ansarullah, but a 9/11 thousands did. And the Yemen's war, you have tens of thousands possibly to have died.
Yes, well, there certainly is an inconsistency in the American position on that. I mean, the Saudi coalition war in Yemen is an international disgrace and has been condemned by certainly many of the opposition parties in Europe and even some of the European governments. And it is a tragedy that apparently the White House and the Trump administration in general find no problem in backing this merciless war in which, as you say, tens of thousands have been killed and what the United Nations has described as the worst humanitarian disaster in the world has been caused. So that clearly should stop. You're right also, as far as we know, nobody was killed in the attacks on the oil installations. But it's interesting, there has been condemnation from both Russia and China of the attack on those installations because of the potential scale of damage to the world energy supply. I know we're not then talking about human lives, but we're talking about possible disruption of the energy supply. The oil price, of course, did shoot up after the Saturday attack, but it's gone back down again now as the Saudis have assured people that actually the damage was not that terrible, mm-hmm. and they will be able to resume supplies fairly quickly.
So, Michael Springman, I would guess if I'm Saudi Arabia that I would be in a bit of a conundrum here to calculate whether I should move ahead, continue with this war, or not, because the lifeline has been hit. We're talking about 6 million, maybe even more barrels per day. They say that the production is resumed today. They said that, but based on analysis made, it's going to take weeks before this really gets up and running. Do you think that what has happened, in which the Ansarullah, by the way, has threatened that it would attack again unless the war stops? That's another thing that's not highlighted. Ansarullah says, we want the war to stop, which is why we're doing what we're doing. Do you think Saudi Arabia and its backer, namely the U.S., and we should also mention U.K. and France, would start thinking twice about supporting this war?
Well, in a rational world, they would. The Saudis have bought billions of dollars from the United States, from Britain, from France, and from Germany. And all of these wonder weapons, 21st century technology, could not defend against this asymmetric attack from anywhere, the sea, the land, another country like Qatar, that penetrated the Saudi defenses and their sophisticated radar systems and wrecked the Opcake refinery, which is a long way from anywhere. So I think that it should concentrate their minds and make them think, well, if we can persist with the war, what will the Ansarullah freedom fighters in Yemen do next to us?
So the demonization of Iran has been flying from the U.S., Jonathan Fryer, and Iran's leader today has spoken regarding the way that the U.S. has treated Iran, for example, in the maximum pressure policy. And it says that that's not working. In terms of the way the U.S. is acting, obviously there needs to be some cooling down of tensions in this region, in particular when it comes to Iran and the U.S. Do you think that there's any possibility that, based on the precondition, in a sense, that Iran's leader has said, that the U.S. needs to come back to the JCPOA, the nuclear agreement, in order for any type of discussions, not one-on-one or bilateral, to take place? What are the chances of that?
Well, it's interesting that the German Chancellor, Angela Merkel, said very clearly that the way forward is to try to get the Americans to come back into the Iran nuclear deal, and certainly that would be supported by Britain and France as well. But I think what is going to be interesting will be what happens next week at the United Nations General Assembly, not so much what happens in the plenary with the set piece speeches, but the bilateral meetings that take place between different leaders. Now, of course, the Supreme Leader in Iran has said there will be no bilateral meeting between Iranian President and President Trump. But there will be all sorts of opportunity for some sort of mediation through a third party, perhaps some country or representative who was seen to be a relatively neutral figure, because clearly there do need to be negotiations of some kind going on to back away from what otherwise could be a very risky situation indeed.
Do you think there's any possibility, Michael Springman, that there is going to be any type of talks to try to end this war when it comes to Saudi Arabia and Yemen's Ansarullah? Weeks ago, there was a report that came out from the Washington Post that the U.S. is prodding Saudi Arabia to have talks with Ansarullah in Oman. Well, it was supposed to be secret talks. That hasn't happened yet. But it seems like there is a motion to that direction. How strong a possibility do you see that at this point?
Well, I'm not really optimistic on that. Certainly the Saudis and the Americans and the Emiratis have had their face rubbed in their mistakes. They've seen what happens when a small but desperate group of people organize themselves to fight back against the Saudi and the Emirati tyranny. But all the secret behind the door meetings and all of the stories of talks have gone for naught. You've still got Mohammed bin Salman there as crown prince. He was the guy who started the war, and he's not about to drop it and say, gee, I made a terrible mistake. I've killed all these thousands of people. I've destroyed this entire country's healthcare system. I've starved all of these people. Oh, gee, well, I'm terribly sorry, and goodbye, and ma'a salama, y'all. I don't think he's going to do that. It would put him out on the end of a branch, and he would saw the branch off and commit political suicide. So I think he's going to go ahead until the Saudi people suddenly rise up and say, we're tired of being bombed by the freedom fighters in Yemen.
And finally, let me bring about something that has been mentioned by Iranian Foreign Minister Jonathan Fryer. And this is what he has proposed. It's called Iran's Non-Aggression Pact, in which the regional countries in the region, including Saudi Arabia and, of course, Iran, together would try to solve the problems that exist in the region, to try to pretty much diffuse any tensions that there may be, and to find a path forward or way forward. And do you think that that is something that is viable, that perhaps should be highlighted more and pushed more, and more effort should be put in? And of course, how Saudi Arabia, whether it would react to something like that or not?
Yes, I think it's quite a hopeful development, and it actually reflect also some of the thinking in Oman, which was mentioned earlier in the program, which very much wants to be a mediator between the two sides in the conflict in Yemen and other countries in the region, including Qatar, which is itself, of course, the subject of sanctions and other actions by Saudi Arabia and some other countries. So there is a general feeling around the region that some sort of regional settlement would be a really good positive thing. And frankly, the less outside powers like America or indeed Britain get involved in that, probably the better, because I think ultimately it has to be the region that sorts out its own problems and agrees to not forgive and forget everything that's happened, but at least acknowledge that it's in everybody's interest to stop war, to stop conflict, and to actually work together.
Thank you very much for that. We're going to end it there. Author and broadcaster Jonathan Fryer from London, and thank you, former U.S. diplomat in Saudi Arabia, Michael Springman from Washington, D.C. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. For Mika Batawa, entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.